In Depth with Francis Rose on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. Usable news and information for your job. And now, here's Francis Rose.
Thanks for listening to In Depth with Francis Rose for Thursday, November 10th, 2011, on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. Today on Industry Chatter, my guest is Kevin Kelly, the Chief Operating Officer for LGS. It's great to have you on the program today, Kevin. Thanks for coming in.
Thanks for having me.
Happy to do it. Let's start, as we always do, with kind of the thumbnail of what your company does and who you serve primarily in the federal government.
Okay. LGS Innovations came about through the merger of Lucent Technologies and Alcatel Telecommunications. Lucent being a primarily U.S.-based company based in New Jersey, the home of Bell Laboratories, and Alcatel being based in France. The Defense Department expressed a very explicit interest in maintaining their access to the technologies in Bell Laboratories,
mm-hmm.
recognizing that the two companies, once merged, were going to be headquartered in Paris. They asked us to create a separate subsidiary, what they call an SSA subsidiary. And there's other companies, BAE Systems,
mm-hmm.
and the like, who created such a subsidiary. And they help assign board members to manage the company and look out for the national security interests within the company.
Mm-hmm.
And we took the government unit out of Lucent Technologies, the government unit out of Alcatel, put them together, and formed LGS Innovations. And we started operations January 1st, 2007.
Mm-hmm.
So we serve the entire federal government marketplace, not state and local, no commercial, no foreign governments, just U.S. federal government. And we're divided into three sectors, civilian, DOD, and the advanced programs or intelligence community.
What's your breakdown primarily in business among those three segments?
It's heavy in DOD. That's probably the heaviest and our longest legacy.
Mm-hmm.
That business began with the Western Electric Company prior to World War II and has been in existence ever since. The intelligence community, from an infrastructure standpoint and a tactical communication standpoint, is a pretty strong business. And civilian is really a growing business. We've had large civilian business in the past. It's ebbed a little bit in the recent years, but mm-hmm. it's starting to pick up again, particularly in the area of mobility.
I imagine it's pretty easy to go to a civilian agency and say, hey, our solutions are good enough for the military, so they're going to work for you too.
Yes and no. So it's civilian agencies, they all buy a little differently.
Mm-hmm.
They spend a little differently. They have slightly different acquisition processes, and that's why we've divided our business up that way. We've been for a long time in the tactical communications business, aircraft, undersea, spacecraft, in the battlefield, and that really lends itself very well towards the DOD missions.
Mm-hmm.
More and more, as I said, as the civilian agencies consider mobility as part of their mission, we're getting more involved with the civilian agencies.
The mobility issue, too, is huge in the military because, we see stories, it seems like almost every week, that the military is doing something to introduce mobile technology at some level in the field, and whether it's mobile devices or wireless networks that obviously have to have the highest level of security. As I'm looking at your company's website, I see wireless solutions as one of the areas that you play in pretty heavily. How are the demands of especially the defense customers that you deal with, but other agencies too, changing in the mobile space, in particular in the wireless space?
So I think the most significant change is the adoption of COTS solutions,
mm-hmm.
COTS technology. As I mentioned, with the Western Electric days through AT&T, Bell Labs, Lucent, and so forth, this company has been manufacturing very specialized communications technologies, mostly wireless, push-to-talk radios, telemetry systems, systems that communicate between tactical units on in the battlefield, in space, in an aircraft. More and more, the DOD and especially civilian agencies are interested in utilizing iPads, smartphones, tablets, Android tablets, and alike. They're very powerful, very sophisticated. And if you look at the transition, one of the charts we like to use a lot in our presentations is a plot that shows bandwidth throughput capacity of the DOD systems over time,
mm-hmm.
and how they have been now outpaced by the commercial technologies, and as we move into the 4G LTE world, we're talking 10 times the bandwidth capacity in a commercial device than you have, say, for instance, in a joint tactical radio system.
Yeah. Is it fair to say that mobile technology, proprietary mobile technology in government's kind of been overcome by events?
It's starting to, yes.
Yeah. Because I read some of the things about 4G networks, and it doesn't sound like it would be, like there'd be any way that you could build a network like that from scratch, and here it is. This is going to be just a commercially available technology within, what, 2 to 5 years that everybody will be able to leverage pretty much.
Yeah. I think that's a reasonable time frame.
Yeah. Building a network like that, though, that is secure is the big challenge, I imagine, in especially in a DOD or in an intelligence environment.
Security is a huge factor, and it's in fact one of the parameters that kept our customers from adopting commercial wireless technologies.
Mm-hmm.
We're all familiar with several, especially DOD and intelligence locations, where you have to, you know, leave your cell phone in the car before you walk through the door.
Yep.
The trusted nature of wireless networking just wasn't there. 4G is interesting. It's IP door to door, so you're going IP Internet Protocol all the way to the end user device. And whether you're using WiMAX or using LTE, the ability to use the security technologies that we're used to in our desktop environment and our enterprise on a cell phone, on a smartphone, on a tablet, really presents us with a brand new security regime, one that we're familiar with, but applied in the wireless space, and starting to give CIOs and information security officers a lot more comfort when integrating wireless systems.
Now, I imagine you have a dog in the hunt in the LTE versus WiMAX thing, but there was a long period of time, I think, where a lot of agencies felt they had to bet on one or the other, and it seems like that's kind of dissipated now, where, again, this is another case where the technology's kind of overcome those kinds of decisions. Is that fair to say?
It's fair to say we make both, and there is a very definite application for WiMAX solutions. In fact, in the tactical mobile environment, the Army in particular has a very strong need for WiMAX systems. And we have, you know, tactical base stations that are flip a switch within a few minutes. They're up and running and you're communicating full motion video, point to point or within a squadron or full mesh networking in WiMAX. LTE is the worldwide standard. That's where everything's going. We, of course, have LTE systems as well. Our parent company is participating in building, you know, Verizon Wireless, AT&T, Sprint, some of the largest networks in the world, all LTE. So that's eventually where we're all going to go. But there's still application for both at the moment.
The techno geek part of me might want to get into how that happened a little bit later in the program, because I remember reading maybe three, four, 5 years ago about WiMAX technology, and people thought, well, this is where everything's headed, and the concept sounds fantastic, and maybe we can talk a little bit later on about why the actual deployment of it was more challenging than it looked like. What, when it comes to some of the technologies that you mentioned, full motion video and some of those kinds of things, and we've done a number of stories about, especially the military using video, and I imagine it's common in the intelligence community too. What kinds of solutions are the agencies coming to you and asking for, or is it a case where they're saying, just show us what you got, and we're counting on you to be an innovator and kind of anticipate what our needs are, or maybe a balance, some of each?
It's a little bit of both, and I'll tell you, a very effective demonstration technique is to take our commercial solutions. So take, for instance, augmented reality. So you see a lot of demonstrations in a social networking environment of where a teenager shows up at a shopping mall and is looking at their screen on their smartphone, and they're taking an image of the mall, and they see little icons appearing. There's your friend Joe, and there's your friend Sally, and they're in the mall, and oh, that's kind of neat. You know, we've got a little social group pulling together here. There's battlefield applications for that, obviously. Blue force tracking and surveillance technologies for border applications. So that's an example of taking a very commercial, teenager-driven, if you will, solution and demonstrating its applicability in the government mission space. The other side of that coin, of course, is the warfighter has a very strong interest in using collaborative video for command and control purposes, and that's one of the things that we're demonstrating right now at the NIE demonstration with the Army. showing full motion video and collaboration with multiple tactical units at the same time using smartphones and tablets.
When we come back from the break, I want to talk some more about that, because I imagine there was, at least at the beginning, a level of discomfort with using just some technology, as you mentioned, that some kid is using in a similar application. So let's chat about that a little bit when we come back on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. My guest is Kevin Kelly of LGS on Federal News Radio 1500 AM.
Donating to United Way of the National Capital Area and its charities is an easy way to champion a cause. With every payroll deduction, you can be a knight in shining armor battling childhood diabetes or illiteracy, or a fairy godmother granting job skills, elder care, or shelter from domestic abuse. Choose CFC code 31408 and be a superhero to those in need in our community. No cape required. Amazing things happen when we stand united.
This is Lisa Millman from AFMA. For over 132 years, we've been protecting all military members and their families with low-cost life insurance and unique survivor assistance services. We focus on our members' best interests. That means offering the best prices on life insurance for all military personnel and policies with no war, no aviation, and no terrorism clauses or surcharges. Get a free quote today at AFMA.com. That's AAFMAA.com.
To make a commitment is to see things through, confident that no matter what the obstacles, we can build something better together. With the planned combination of AT&T and T-Mobile, we're making a commitment to create a stronger network for all our customers. We will invest an additional $8 billion and build out the next generation of mobile broadband to nearly everyone in America. Building that network will mean better coverage, better call quality, and faster downloads. But it will also create as many as 96,000 American jobs. And we will begin bringing 5,000 jobs to America from overseas. We're committed to investing in America now. Why? Well, we know it's good business. Because America has always been, and always will be, a smart investment. AT&T. Rethink possible.
To win and deliver government contracts successfully, you need to align with the right teaming partners. Meet Tech Systems. While often behind the scenes, Tech Systems has worked with government agencies and systems integrators for over 25 years. In fact, every year, they deploy over 70,000 IT professionals at over 5,500 client sites nationwide, including more than 65 government agencies. Tech Systems is active across a broad spectrum of government programs and has developed deep relationships to understand what works well and who does it best. Thinking about cybersecurity, working on a cloud computing initiative. Tech Systems addresses critical program gaps related to people, projects, and work functions. Their delivery models scale from staff augmentation to IT project and outsourcing services to support transition, ramp-up, surge, and ongoing program support needs. Learn more at TechSystems.com, TechSystems.com.
I'm Amy Morris. Here's a look at Thursday morning's Federal Drive. Can the Postal Service be saved? We'll get a closer look at what lawmakers are proposing. And the Department of Labor has a new online resource just for veterans to help them find civilian jobs. That and more Thursday morning starting at 6 on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. For all the latest federal news, go to federalnewsradio.com.
We're back on In Depth with Francis Rose on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. Kevin Kelly of LGS is my guest on Industry Chatter today. And we talked about the introduction of consumer-type technology, especially in DOD, and the willingness to adopt it. I imagine there was not quite as much willingness to adopt that kind of technology at the beginning. What's kind of gotten the agency, not just DOD, but all the agencies, over that hump to say, you know what, it's not going to hurt us to use the same kind of stuff that everybody else is using. We don't have to grow our own.
So I think they, there is still some hesitation around it's not going to hurt us. Mm-hmm. And so the government right now is wrestling with how do they get better visibility into the supply chain? How do they protect against counterfeit products making their way into the mission space? But it's I think, clearly being driven by economics. Mm-hmm. This is an economic issue. The affordability of custom solutions in the long term doesn't look good. The capability, security, and ability to certify and verify compliance with commercial products has gotten a lot better.
Mm-hmm.
And I think the two areas are meeting. You're getting a very adequate supply of new technologies, some good visibility into the supply chain, and just pure economics are driving the need to incorporate more off-the-shelf technologies and stay away from, as much as you can anyway, the customized development.
Is it fair to say that because of the nature of the devices, the communications devices, that the agencies use now, because so many of them are software-driven, like iPhones and other kinds of smartphones and so on, is it fair to say that you can almost take a COTS approach where a particular type of smartphone might be the 80% solution and you or someone else can develop something, a custom application for that particular device that suits the rest of the 20% need of the agency?
Absolutely. And that's a new presents us with a brand new way of acquiring software and solutions. It suggests a brand new commerce model for the government to examine and adopt, meaning the multi-industry approach towards developing solutions, as opposed to buying the one and done fully integrated system that's going to operate for the next 5 to 10 years. These systems change very rapidly. Software changes, new features come out. And this is something that our traditional government acquisition system was not built to handle, but mm-hmm. it's getting there.
Yeah.
And more CIOs are demanding the ability to incorporate those COTS systems, as well as the rapid nature of development and integration that comes along with them.
All right, let me give you a suppose. Okay. and see how this breaks out as far as the business model goes. Suppose 5 years ago, I needed a communications device. I would probably typically come to you and say, this is what we want to do. Give us some input for an RFP. We'd draft something, put it out there, and I'd ask you to make me a radio. And it would communicate with all the other radios on the network, so on, blah, blah, blah. And those would cost X dollars per copy. The way it looks to me now from the outside, the application is different. Instead, I'm going to go to my telecom provider and I'm going to say, I want X number of Android phones that work on this network that LGS provides, and I'm going to get those devices, and then I'm going to come to you and say, I also want an app to do this. But the app business model, for the most part, is a 99-cent per seat business model. Is that workable long-term, not just for your company, I'm not asking about your strategy, but for the business in general? Or is there a way to demonstrate value so that the consumer business model doesn't necessarily apply to the government?
I think it's workable long-term.
Mm-hmm.
It's not something that anybody's doing in any large scale at the moment in the federal government marketplace. So,
is that, do you think, because the vendors aren't geared up to do it yet, or the agencies aren't asking for it yet?
I'll put the onus on the agencies. The vendor communities are organizing, but they're not there yet. I mean, we're gonna organize solutions in order to meet demand.
Mm-hmm.
We're gonna provide what's asked for, but at the same time, we're trying to work with our government acquisition agencies to help them ask more smartly for the solutions that we think they need and to keep up with the pace of play.
Mm-hmm.
And we're gonna borrow models in the end. At the end of the day, we're gonna borrow models that we see in the commercial world. We've all heard statements at conferences, a federal government executive stand up in front of a group of people and say, I need my own app store.
Mm-hmm.
I need my own Amazon portal for acquiring app, data or applications.
Yeah.
And really what they're saying is they want the whole infrastructure that goes in behind that.
Mm-hmm.
One of the unique perspectives we have as being a subsidiary of Alcatel-Lucent is we have exposure to the commercial development model.
Mm-hmm.
So I'll give you an example. Alcatel-Lucent has a forum. They don't own it. They sponsor it and encourage companies to join. It's called NG Connect. NG Connect is a forum in which development companies come and offer their solutions as part of a broader solution. It could be a grocery list application. It could be a device that monitors fuel economy on your vehicle. It can be any type of consumer-based solution that has a role in mobility and in general life.
Mm-hmm.
There's no commitment between those companies. There's no intellectual property agreements. You're going into this with a bit of risk and saying, I'm going to expose my technology in an API. I trust that you and the rest of the companies in this forum are going to make good use of it, and together we're going to develop business accordingly. And this
mm-hmm.
is where it only works if you're doing the 99-cent application model. It only works if you trust your partners and trust your commerce model and have a delivery mechanism that's going to provide this, the App Store. You know, you need that delivery mechanism and that commerce model to deliver the solution to the end customer. I think we'll end up borrowing from those in the end.
I want to talk more about the App Store model. You mentioned something that I have been hearing a lot, too, and that is just about every agency saying they want their own. And I'm thinking about the structure of building at least 20-some app stores and maybe hundreds of them potentially as I look at the list of all of the agencies and sub-agencies in the government. So let's explore that a little bit when we come back on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. My industry chatter guest today is Kevin Kelly of LGS, and we'll continue our conversation in a moment.
Here are the ins and outs of Hyundai from the people who know it inside and out, the people who actually work here.
They allow you to grow with the company. That is Hyundai. That's the difference.
It's all about jobs. I love my job.
I am happy to be here. I'm proud to be here.
We're all like one big family.
Pride of ownership and pride of craftsmanship.
I feel a sense of pride. I feel a sense of accomplishment. Something that we all can rejoice in because we've done this together.
Building cars that Americans want.
Teamwork, commitment, and pride.
I love working with my team. We're more of a family.
It's about building cars in America.
Yeah, it's a good feeling. It really is.
What they used to call the American way.
It still works here.
This is not just a job. This is a career. We have a career here.
Proud partner in the American dream. Dream with us at HyundaiAmerica.us.
I'm so proud that my kids are proud. They're proud of me. So we love Hyundai.
Hyundai. New thinking. New possibilities.
The Cloud Conundrum, Public, Private, or Both, a panel discussion with experts from government and industry sponsored by Brocade. Panelist Chris Smith, CIO of USDA.
Internally, we stood up our own private cloud offerings as we were doing data center consolidation. I started out by saying it was an evolution. 2 years ago, we knew the value that was in sharing compute, getting higher virtualization levels, getting a more secure platform. So we've been on that path. We've seen a 60% reduction in operating expenses. And that's huge. And we look at our rates every year to say, okay, are we competitive within the government space? We're cross-servicing other folks.
Cloud innovations are here. Is your network optimized? Accelerate to the cloud with Brocade's new technology and business models. Brocade's cloud-optimized solutions provide a foundation to help organizations migrate to private clouds. What does this mean to your agency? Increased utilization, simplified management, and an agile organization. That's why Brocade solutions are used in over 90% of global 1,000 data centers. Learn how Brocade will transition your organization to a virtualized world. Go to federalnewsradio.com. Search Cloud.
How would you like up to $50 out of the blue? That's the wellness incentive from the Blue Cross Blue Shield Federal Employee Program. Complete our Blue Health Assessment and get up to $50 for qualified medical expenses. $50 out of the blue. Who knew? To learn more about the Federal Employee Program, visit whoknew.fbpblue.org or call 1-800-411-BLUE.
A check on chickenpox. From the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, I'm Ira Dreyfus with HHS HealthBeat. Vaccination has made chickenpox a lot less common now, but at the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention, researcher Jessica Lung says the viral disease is still around and it can be spread easily. Anyone who hasn't had chickenpox and isn't vaccinated with the chickenpox vaccine can get infected. Lung says that although chickenpox typically is not terrible, it creates itchy, fluid-filled blisters that eventually become scabs. Chickenpox can be life-threatening in some cases. She also says it can be avoided.
CDC recommends that children get two doses of chickenpox vaccine, the first dose at 12 to 15 months of age, and a second dose at 4 to 6 years of age.
She says the two doses are very safe and effective. Learn more at HHS.gov. HHS HealthBeat is a production of the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services. I'm Ira Dreyfuss.
Join a firm at their December 8th luncheon for an in-depth discussion of government contracting trends and techniques. Hear highlights on what's hot and what's not in federal acquisition as Tech America unveils usage trends for IDIQs, GWACs, and scheduled contracts. A lively panel moderated by Wyatt Cash of AOL Government will follow with experts from NASA, GSA, NIH, and Navy discussing innovations in government contracting. Lunch and learn with a firm at the Sofitel Hotel on Thursday, December 8th at noon. Register today at affirm.org.
We're back on In-Depth with Francis Rose on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. Kevin Kelly is my guest. He is the Chief Operating Officer of LGS. And during the break, we were talking about adopting COTS packets, items, in particular software, but also commercial devices. And everybody seems to be looking at least towards some kind of smartphone, whether it's iPhone or an Android-based device. Tablets, same deal. Some agencies looking at the BlackBerry playbooks and others focusing more on iPads and some of the Android tabs. But what is driving the willingness after decades and decades and decades of requiring custom-made solutions? Is it just budget issues that are driving the willingness of the agencies to adopt both software and hardware solutions that are pretty much consumer-based?
It's largely economics. Mm-hmm. The other piece is the rapid development cycle, which used to be a bit of a threat to the federal government marketplace, is now viewed, I believe, as a virtue. And as the government mission changes, and as you ebb and flow between wartime and peacetime, between peacekeeping missions, between surveillance missions, protecting the border, sending troops overseas, the mission is not as constant as it used to be. It's mm-hmm. constantly changing. And you add to that the fact that your average warfighter these days is a 18 to 22 year old young man or young woman in the battlefield who's very adept using this technology and may have exposure to development environments. They're relatively inexpensive to come by.
Mm-hmm.
And I think they're impressing their superiors and their leadership with the ability to rapidly develop solutions and kind of break the long five-year development life cycle that, mm-hmm. that we were all used to years ago.
We talked during the break earlier in the hour about a high-level military official that I talked to not too long ago saying that very thing. You know, you have warfighters in Iraq and Afghanistan who are literally designing apps to help them save their lives and their buddies' lives. And then you have COs who come along and say, how did you do that? And they're saying, well, I did this and that. And a CO is certainly not going to say, well, stop doing that. It's not been approved through the acquisition cycle. So my question about that rapid development cycle is, it's good news that there is more receptiveness to it. But are the agencies equipped to deal with it even as they become more comfortable with it?
I think they're still struggling with it. One of the most refreshing conversations I had was at DARPA. My CTO and I went in to meet with some of the executives at DARPA, and we talked about this very issue. And we talked about some of the existing BAAs that DARPA had, and you know, their mission is to foster the development of technologies that are eventually going to make their way into the mission space in the DoD.
Mm-hmm.
We talked about mobile devices. We talked about application development. And we said that doesn't really fit the DARPA model for developing software in particular, these tools that are going to be used by the warfighter. And these executives presented us with a plan. They said, it's funny you mention that. This is what we're working on. Mm-hmm. And it was kind of refreshing to see that they're not throwing out their acquisition model, but they're definitely willing to look at a brand new way of development on the fly, try often, fail often, succeed, you know, risk big, win big kind mm-hmm. of approach, which is very different than the risk-averse systems engineering waterfall process that we're all used to developing software that takes 5 or 10 years to deploy in the field.
Mm-hmm.
They told us some anecdotal stories of just, as you mentioned, in-battlefield development that was occurring and embraced by the military leadership.
Mm-hmm.
You've got to keep some controls on that. You can definitely introduce some chaos and some risk in doing so. But they're struggling with the right way to manage the risk versus reward of that, and it's refreshing.
But it's dramatically different to be able to say, this is how we are going to do it, or to have maybe a commander say, I want this, and I want everybody in my command to have access to it. That doesn't really translate well to a civilian agency.
Right.
You don't have the same chain of command situation, command structure that you have in the military. Any thoughts about how a civilian agency could adapt that theory, adapt that philosophy to the way that they do acquisition to be able to make it work within the structure that they have in place but still achieve a similar end result?
So let me answer that a slightly different way.
Okay.
In the DOD, very needs-based,
mm-hmm.
right? Lead flying over your head. These are important issues.
Yeah.
Life and death. Very needs-based, very well-defined situation. The development is in response to the need. What I'm seeing in the civilian agencies is a willingness to buy the device first. We're seeing some of that,
mm-hmm.
right? Go ahead and buy 2,000 iPads. Go ahead and start using the iPhone. I'll figure out the security. I'll figure out how to integrate the App Store into my commerce model. I'll figure out what my whole acquisition strategy is going to be around this. So it's a little more aggressive, a
mm-hmm.
little more throw caution to the wind, but they're slow to integrate, and I think for a good reason, slow to integrate those mobile devices into their enterprise because of the requirements that are not lifted on federal CIOs to protect their information, ensure things like non-repudiation, make sure you've got the appropriate malware protection mechanisms and so forth.
Mm-hmm.
So one's, you know, again, the DOD side, very needs-based. The other one is, let's get people using these. Start with smart people. Start with hard problems. We'll figure the rest out as we go along. And that makes it a little less clear for companies like ours to figure out, how are they going to buy this? You know, what's the approach? I understand the DOD one pretty well.
Mm-hmm.
And we're very much engaged in very succinct, endorsed programs like NIE for certification. But on the civilian side, there's a bit of a more haphazard nature, which in science and engineering, not a bad thing. You know, you need to stir the tanks a little bit and
mm-hmm.
get some new thinking in there.
Yeah.
So I think it's still forming on the civilian side.
Let's continue. I want to continue that thought when we come back on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. My guest is Kevin Kelly. He is the Chief Operating Officer at LGS on In Depth with Francis Rose. Back in a moment.
The Department of Defense update is brought to you by ITT Excellus.
The Army is aiming to get 25% of its energy from renewable resources by 2025. To do it, they're building a standard process or template so the Office of the Secretary of Defense knows the Army has done the right planning and checks, whether it's solar, wind, biofuels, or another form of renewable energy. Deputy Assistant Secretary of the Army for Energy and Sustainability Richard Kidd says the template concept should cut approval time from years down to 3 to 6 months.
A new company with more than 50 years of experience, ITT Defense is now ITT Excellus. The reliable, flexible partner you've come to know is now tightly focused on providing innovative, essential C4 ISR solutions and information and technical services. A new name in aerospace and defense, they're already a global top 20 leader. Work with a true partner, ready to solve your challenges with situational agility and a record of rapidly fielding affordable solutions. Experience the power of ingenuity at excellusinc.com.
What Facebook has done, they're transforming advertising. With Google click-through, you don't really know who's clicking through. But with Facebook, you can so specify who's looking at your ads that it's extremely targeted. That's why Google is so worried, because Facebook has created this closed ecosystem. They don't allow Google search into their little private kingdom. And Google is afraid that the Facebook community will become larger than Google's.
Stratford University's Tech Talk Radio, Saturday mornings from 9 to 10 on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM.
Newsmakers on In Depth with Francis Rose.
Gordon Adams, professor of international relations at American University.
Employment in the defense industry has shrunk by about 1.5 million people over the last 25, 30 years. The industry is not at all afraid to shed people when it's in its business interest. So there's something kind of hypocritical about the appeal that says, oh my gosh, don't cut the jobs, this is valuable labor force, when every business will turn around and shed people and turn it in for technology if they can.
Hear the entire interview online, federalnewsradio.com/in-depth.
Profile America, Thursday, November 10th. Today is the anniversary of the founding of the U.S. Marine Corps in 1775. The Continental Congress, meeting in Philadelphia, passed a resolution that two battalions of Marines be raised as landing forces with the young Navy fleet. Serving on land and at sea, these first Marines distinguished themselves in a number of important operations, including their first amphibious raid at New Providence in the Bahamas. Since that time, the Marines have continued to add to their legacy, playing a vital role in a wide variety of operations around the world, in places with names such as Iwo Jima, Vietnam, Baghdad, and Kandahar. Today, there are 21,000 officers and 181,000 enlisted men and women in the U.S. Marine Corps. Profile America is in its 15th year as a public service of the U.S. Census Bureau.
This is In Depth with Francis Rose on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. Kevin Kelly of LGS is my guest on Industry Chatter today. We talked in the last segment about the rapid development cycle that the mobile technology world and technology world in general is bringing to the federal government. And you talked about some progress that agencies are making. The ones that are getting better at managing acquisitions and being that conduit between you and the end user, as the acquisition cycle shrinks, as the development cycle shrinks, the ones that are doing it well, what are they doing?
So a model that we're familiar with is this multi-award, large contract, not a large GWAC type contract, but bring your wares, prove your capabilities. If you have the ability to produce a software product, for instance, in 3 months, demonstrate your past performance, demonstrate the type of experience you have. You must be, you know, capable of using the following applications, the following languages, supporting the following requirements that we levy on all of our software. And we're going to throw tasks out there, and it might be 40 contractors who receive these overnight. They've got 24 to 48 hours to respond and say, yes, I can do something like that, and I'll get you a cost in another 24 hours, or, you know, that's not me. I don't have that capability. Mm-hmm. One way or the other, you have to affirm your position. And it allows the customers to select 1, 2, 3 developers at a time and say, you know, I like, of the 12 responses, you three seem to have the best answers. Here's some money. Go ahead. The good news is, in 3 months, you can't spend that much money, right? So it's a low cost of entry. Here's seed money for the three of you. Go ahead and develop the solution, and I'll evaluate them at the end. Again, very different than the RFI, RFP, RFQ phase, mm-hmm. and then through the development life cycle. So I don't want to get into specific agencies for fear
sure.
that some may look better than others.
Sure.
We love all of our customers. but that's one we've seen that works.
Is the 12-week to 18-month development model working for agencies, or are they still getting used to that concept too, to the switch to Agile from the waterfall process?
I believe they're still getting used to it.
Yeah.
It's,
will it work when they get comfortable with it and when they get really equipped to manage it to their best ability? Will it work, or are we going to find ourselves with the pendulum swinging back in 2 years or 5 years or whatever, where people are going to say, you know what, we're going to just go in a different direction this time?
I can't imagine it not working. At the same time, I don't see a clear path to daylight at the moment. There's a lot of requirements that we put on acquisition professionals. There's a lot of accounting requirements we put on our CFOs to justify cost and do BOEs. And that's just not the way the commercial world works. It's two guys in a garage, and they get together and pull something together. And if it works, they say, hey, everybody, look at this. They film a YouTube video. They stand up a web page. And this all happens within 12 hours.
Yeah.
And there it is. And if you want it, here's the price. If you don't want it, don't buy it. And that's the acquisition cycle that the commercial world is familiar with now.
Mm-hmm.
We're never going to go that far off the deep end in the federal marketplace, but it flies in the face of all of the requirements that we've levied and all of the checks and balances and oversight that we currently have.
But in an environment where vendors are becoming increasingly nervous about how do I protect my market share and how do I grow market share in this budget environment, it seems to me that that's exactly contrary to those emotions, because there are all these opportunities. I shouldn't say all these, because I don't know how many incubations there are like you're talking about. But those opportunities are out there for the LGSs of the world to find somebody like that and say, you know what, we have what you don't have, which is relationships in the federal government, the ability to market your product to the right people who can really use it to benefit the taxpayer, and you have something we don't have, which is the technology that the agency needs to solve a problem and meet its mission. So there's a transaction that still exists there that's going to add value to the vendor community. It's going to add value to the agency and the taxpayer, right?
Absolutely. And going back to something I said earlier, some of the solutions that we've developed in the commercial world have never been required in the federal government marketplace, but they probably have some application. And when the opportunity presents itself, you're invited by a U.S. Army unit to demonstrate a mobile base station and some handhelds and a very specialized application that came out of DARPA. This is a real-world scenario.
Mm-hmm.
We do that. A piece of that demonstration requires identity management. It requires a demonstration of encryption technologies. Well, if you don't have off-the-shelf, you know, you can't pull the latest DoD encryptor off the shelf or the latest application that the U.S. Army has secured and is reserving for their own personal use, you grab the commercial one and you put that into your demonstration. And it's, I think, refreshing to see government acquisition folks as well as leadership take a look at that and say, hey, what is that you're using?
Mm-hmm.
It just did facial feature recognition. It just did voice printing. What is that? And you get a chance to introduce a brand new company, one with whom you have a relationship in the commercial world, our parent company does, and you may provide a good venue for them to open up a new market.
Mm-hmm.
One of the things we were talking about is the challenge of the economy. These app developers are making $1, $2 on an application. They need a much broader market deployment than even just the commercial world. So I think companies like LGS offer them exposure to a federal government marketplace that they just simply don't have access to.
We're going to take one more break. When we come back, I want to talk. You mentioned CFOs, cost, budgets, and we've talked about all of those things. I want to dig into that specifically when we come back to wrap up on In Depth with Francis Rose on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. Kevin Kelly of LGS, my guest, and we'll continue in just a moment.
Do you know us? You count on our technology every day. The office elevator that takes you up and down efficiently. The jet engine that gets you home safely. The fire suppression system you hope you never need, but know is there. You count on things we make to protect you from harm, and even to keep you cool and comfortable. Our technologies are a critical part of your everyday life. Yet many people don't even know who we are. Our name is United Technologies. We are Carrier, Hamilton Sunstrand, Otis, Pratt & Whitney, Sikorsky, and UTC Fire and Security. Six businesses united as one powerful company. In fact, we are one of the largest manufacturers in the United States, which likely makes us the biggest company you've never heard of, even though you depend on us every single day. United Technologies. Get to know more about us at UTC.com.
powered by the latest second-generation Intel Core processors, new HP ProLiant GS servers are an ideal choice for reducing power costs and getting a jump on your cloud computing initiatives. GovConnection, a federal elite HP partner, can show you how the power of HP and Intel can achieve ROI in as little as 2 months. Talk to GovConnection and find out how, together, they can power your data center into the future. Call 800-800-0019 today.
IT Professionals, the American Council for Technology and Industry Advisory Council's Academy, is a unique interactive training and education program designed specifically for the federal IT community, both government and industry. Courses in leadership, best practices, and project management start soon, so don't wait. Register today at www.actgov.org/academy. That's www.actgov.org/academy.
This audio puzzle is brought to you by CenturyLink Government. Identify the federal agency problem.
Am I number E enough? All the other information is way prettier. I look fat in this network, don't I?
The answer? Insecure data. With CenturyLink's comprehensive suite of security solutions, even your most sensitive data stays protected. For a free risk assessment, visit CenturyLink.com/federal.
How can federal agencies drive performance in a cutback climate? What are the latest best practices for maximizing efficiency in federal programs? Join HUD Secretary Sean Donovan and hundreds of federal managers to learn how to achieve more with less at Excellence in Government, the Efficiency Imperative, on November 17th in Washington, D.C. Register today to save 35% at www.excelgov.com.
You're listening to In Depth with Francis Rose on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. My guest is Kevin Kelly of LGS on Industry Chatter today. We've talked a lot about getting stuff and using stuff, and one of the big holdups to that over the next several years, and maybe forever at this point, not just in the Defense Department, but all across government, is the budget situation that people are in. It's my view that the challenge is not just dollars, but also uncertainty. Continuing resolutions seem to continue and continue forever. And so nobody really knows at any given time what they're going to be able to buy and when they're going to be able to buy it. What does that do on the vendor side, especially when you're talking about some of the missions that you're working with agencies on?
From our perspective, I think one of the biggest impacts is that it quells innovation.
Mm-hmm.
Innovation has a very defined shelf life. And if you're not turning it over, if you're not producing product, putting it out into the marketplace, our marketplace, and innovating on those products, they die. We always try to keep the science alive. I mean, we have a significant portion of our business that does research. At least a third of our business does research. The good news is research programs are short. They're not large GWAC-type acquisitions. They have seen a delay in funding.
Mm-hmm.
Which has slowed things down somewhat, but not as much in the infrastructure as the infrastructure side of the business. Now, I think we're somewhat fortunate in that we don't build ships or airplanes or submarines, but we do build a lot of the communication systems that make those things work.
Mm-hmm.
So, in as much as the government needs better communications in order to achieve efficiencies, to do more with less. You hear that phrase a lot lately.
Too much.
Yes.
I hate that phrase.
And sometimes you hear less with more, but more with less. It requires an infrastructure that's very efficient, very capable of serving the mission needs. As customers fail to refresh the technologies there, they get stale, mm-hmm. and they get more costly to replace. It puts burdens on companies like ours who pay for innovation, and it causes you to start taking a look at, okay, you were working on an IRAD project, but I don't see any light at the end of this tunnel, so I'm going to put you on a billable program immediately. We're going to shelf what you were doing, which was the next best thing. We're going to shelf that for now,
yeah.
Get you into this agency, get you helping out with their current mission needs, because I'm not sure when this is going to end.
Mm-hmm. Overall, as you look out, maybe a year, 18 months, to 5 years even. Where do you see your company going, maybe that you're not now, Everybody seems to have a plan for how you're going to try to grow and expand in a time like we're in budget-wise.
So we've had a research business forever. I think that'll be there for as long as our government has a need for innovative technologies. We've been building fixed infrastructures on bases and buildings, on campuses for government customers for a very long time. It's just now that the extension of the enterprise, not tactical communications, as I said, we've been there for a long time, but extending the enterprise to mobility, that's really an area. We just opened up a brand new business unit to focus on extending that enterprise into a commercially compliant mobile infrastructure that I think presents us with a wonderful opportunity. And there's other companies like ours that are traditionally not systems integrators, large system integrators, but network builders,
mm-hmm.
you know, for Verizon, Comcast, AT&T, and alike. And I think in the five-year time frame, that's likely to be our biggest growth area.
Mm-hmm. I have a lot more questions and no more time to ask them. I'm grateful for you coming in today. I appreciate your time.
Thank you for the opportunity.
Happy to do it. Kevin Kelly is the Chief Operating Officer for LGS, and you can hear this conversation archived on federalnewsradio.com later this afternoon, and read more about LGS and what they do linked up on our website as well. Coming up in hour number two of In Depth with Francis Rose on Federal News Radio 1500 AM, a better deal on your prescription drug plan may not be out there. Mike Causey will tell you why he thinks that when In Depth with Francis Rose continues in just a minute on Federal News Radio 1500 AM.